The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
And welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews, and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network, as well as on cagematch.net. We're back. I'm your host, Striga. This is our second to last show for the G1 Climax already. Can you believe it, Dylan?
So many memories we've made over the course of this G1.
So many friends we made.
I don't know about friends, but memories.
Enemies we made.
Yeah, maybe me. I don't think you have. I think everybody likes you. At the end of the day. See, so you're safe. You're safe. But I don't know about enemies either. But we've definitely made memories at the end of the day. And New Japan has given us memories, more accurately to say. They've given us stuff we will talk about for months to come.
Yeah.
Coming to this tournament.
So Definitely a tournament that we said it off the air. This is not a boring tournament in the sense of what the results are. We've said it before. This is not a good tournament when it comes to quality. There has been few matches that really stuck out as being really great. I know that a lot of people were behind the Osprey and Phantasma match. We didn't like it as much as a lot of people did, but apparently this is one of the better matches that a lot of people have in their bookings for the G1 Climax.
And I did notice something that you said that you thought Phantasma was eliminated at first when you watched that. He only had 4 points.
Yeah, exactly. I somehow thought that he was eliminated at that point, and it didn't make sense to me why the match was going on last. But I was then corrected by someone and noticed, okay, this match has stakes.
Yes. But I still agree with you, though. So at the end of the day, so that was one of the best matches to many people. It was very meaningful.
Yeah.
I mean, and then the show happened today, and all of our expectations were blown away. All 5-star matches.
Yes, the semifinals for the G1 Climax are set, of course. We have Evil versus Katsushika Okada and Will Ospreay versus Tetsuya Naito. But before we go to the semifinals and our predictions before that, we're talking about the shows from Yokohama, Hamamatsu, and Funabashi, days 15, 16, and 17 of the G1 Climax. First, the D block final, and I guess we're going to talk about very extensively, I guess, about the Evil match against Shingo Takagi and against Sanada. First of all, Dylan, D-Block finished, and in the end, we had Tetsuya Naito winning it, like we most of us expected. Then Jeff Cobb dropped out because of a double countout, which I have a take on. It's a wild finish, in my opinion, too. Then Zack Sabre Jr. overcame Hirooki Goto with the "When did they put all of the Argos in Sainsbury's?" One of his submission moves, yes. And yeah, that then set up Naito and Zack Sabre tying for first place. But of course, Naito won the tiebreaker, and I saw that I messed up the standings on Kapuralov right now. Yeah, Naito won, Zack Sabre second. What did you think about the D-Block final?
There's so much going on. Nobody can keep track of it and be perfect, so it's okay. You know, at the end of the day, there's all these crazy moves they're making, double countouts, and things like that. The first thing I will say on the show is that I really liked the last two matches on the show. The Goto and Zack and Naito and Tanahashi. I thought they both were very effective in what they were trying to do, and probably Goto's best match, as mm-hmm. well as Tanahashi's.
Zack Sabre had a lot of people's best match in this tournament.
I got some stats for you. That, you know, when we go in for the block play, I counted all kinds of stuff on there. Really, just Goto and Naito was Zack's best match, but still, it was a great tournament for Zack. Probably the best of D block so far. And Naito and Tanahashi, Naito, he really wasn't that great for most of the tournament, but when it came to the big matches at the end, he came through once again.
I feel like that we say that every time when Naito has a G1 climax.
Exactly. It's a traditional Naito G1 here. And Tanahashi, not as great as most years, but I mean, his block wasn't as great as most years either. But he was still probably one of the better guys in D-block consistency. One of the few consistent highlights. But I thought they did a great job in the main event with a devastating finish. the Tornado DDT, which I loved that because it was perfectly set up in the Naito and Zack match with the Tornado DDT.
Exactly.
But this time he hit the DDT and it looked freaking awesome. And a great, like, legit finisher.
A legit here. Super finisher, actually, when you just spike someone and roll them up.
Yeah, and like way better than the Destino. I will say you need to hit like three of those in a match to win. This DDT was one and done. Coughlin and Yano, they had Gabe Kidd interfere in that one, so that kind of they tried to give like Yano an edge by powerbombing Kidd through the table.
That's another thing. Like Toru Yano, that would be so great if he just changed his shtick around, right? If he was just developing a mean streak, but. When this tournament will be over, he'll be just old funny Toru Yano again.
Yeah, and well, that's true. And he did take out Kidd, who they tried to push as like this badass type of guy mm-hmm. in A block as well. So that I don't know if that was the smartest decision, but it wasn't as. What I want to hear your take on Common Hayes. You teased it. Tell us what you think, Stringer. People want to know.
I thought the finish was so dumb. Because it made Shane Haste look so bad. If this guy wanted to prevent Jeff Cobb from moving on to the quarterfinals and help his friend out, why isn't he able to just say, okay, I'm going into this match and I'm actually trying to beat Jeff Cobb? I know there is this ongoing thought that Jeff Cobb is so great and is such a physical beast that he's able to just beat everybody up. But if Shane Haste is actually a guy that is supposed to be a contender for the G1 climax, shouldn't he be able to just go one-on-one with Jeff Cobb and beat him?
Well, this match tells us no.
And now I don't know why I should ever get behind Shane Haste as a singles wrestler.
Yeah, I think this tournament proved that you shouldn't.
I mean, he beat Naito, yes. He beat Naito in a great match, I thought. I really loved the match. But that was his one standout match, and now with this weird and dumb finish, I don't know if Shane Haste really gained anything in this tournament.
Oh, I definitely don't think he gained anything. What was worse, this or when he had the bucket on his head?
Oh. I don't know, man. I thought this one was worse.
Because I thought that was like the worst match of the tournament. Yano and Haste, like that was embarrassing. I really didn't want anybody to watch.
Right, the match itself was embarrassing, but I just thought that the finish here was so out of this world. Dumb.
It is. Like, what you're saying is true, but the thing is, with him, I guess, I just, like, that ship has sailed already. Like, yeah. I have any kind of hope of him being good. Like I said, when you look at his partner, I mean, his last block match, we didn't talk about C-block, but, I mean, his block match was awesome. With Ishii, and it showed why he's freaking cool. And Haste is like doing this goofy crap up and down the tournament. And I don't know why, because he was really one of the guys I had circled that I thought may show us something.
Like, I really had him far more circled than I had Mikey Nicholls.
Exactly. Like, and one guy was a great player in the tournament, and the other guy was doing goofy stuff. Again, D-Block wasn't the greatest in terms of the surrounding talent, but he really didn't add much, if anything, really, overall. He ultimately, like, this could have been anybody. Like, this spot, the only purpose of this match was to make sure Cobb didn't advance. Like,
you know what?
I don't, in case anything.
If this had been Chase Owens, I would have totally bought the finish. Because Chase Owens is that guy that relies on cheap tactics.
Yeah.
But Shane Haste? He never came across as the guy that would, and now he did. And yeah, it's one of those matches that make the evil shtick not stand out, because we had this one, the cheating with Alex Coverland and Yano, and then we had it with the outside brawl with Shane Haste in Corp 2. Yeah, and we had more of that on the quarterfinals show today.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. It's just Haste is already so low on the card. I guess it didn't register with me other than, okay, the only thing here is that he did this for a reason. It wasn't just like Evil where every match is like this. He did this specifically to help Zach advance.
Right.
So
yes.
it really didn't stick out to me as anything. I mean, it was the worst match on the show probably, but like it just, I thought, okay, he's helping Zach advance. Like that
was my
reaction ultimately. But I mean, you're not wrong either. But it's just like, it's Haste at the same time. So it's like, oh, yeah, he's not that great.
Just beat the guy.
Well, he wasn't going to do that, though.
Apparently not. Apparently not. No.
Then yes. Even he didn't think so.
Yeah, then let's get him out of the G1 Climax.
Yeah, we talked about this earlier. I think there's political reasons for some of these guys to be in the Climax more than, oh...
That's true.
Absolutely. The thing you're saying are all right. It's just they're thinking on a different wavelength at the end of the day. That's why stuff like this happens.
Two wrestlers that definitely belong were in the semifinal. You said it, the two best matches of the show. Zack Sabre Jr. beat Hirooki Goto. I really thought that this was the best match of the show. Enjoyed all the work that they did, especially around Hirooki Goto's midsection. Just very good stuff.
Yeah, he's another guy, Goto, where early on in the tournament, he was really struggling. They focused a lot on the injury that he had. But the last couple of matches, I thought the match with Cobb was really good. Yep. And this was really good, too, in a different style. And this is another reason why I love Goto so much. I think he's such a great wrestler, is that he could have a great match with Jeff Cobb and then do a match with Zach, and it's totally different, but both of them are great. And I thought this was one of the better matches of the whole block, just behind the Goto and Naito and Tanahashi Naito with the main event. Oh, I think this was maybe ahead of Tanahashi Naito, actually. But this was a great match, and Zach was obviously very good wrestler to put in this tournament to where he could have different styles of matches and give somebody a safe match, too, where you know what you're gonna get. It's not going to be physically exhausting, but you could have a really good match with him, and he's a great player to put in the tournament. Definitely, to me, Zach was the MVP of D Block.
Yeah, you know, Dylan, I was definitely agreed with Zack Sabre Jr. As for the main event, I was getting real sentimental about this one with Naito and Tanahashi, because whenever these two met, regardless of what else was on the show, they usually had my favorite match. This time, I watched the match and I registered that both of these guys definitely have aged, and that's no secret and that's no revelation, but it's just very visible at this point. They still had a good match because they are two very good wrestlers, but we're coming to a point where there is no chance anymore that these two will ever pick up on these great matches that they had years ago, and that's fine. They still delivered a main event that kept the fans' attention and that drew a good house for Hamamatsu, and I guess that's all that you can ask for at this point of their careers.
And I totally agree, and if you notice D-Block, this whole tournament, it wasn't exactly, single-handedly putting the company into the green with the most of this tournament. It was not drawing well, to be honest, on a lot of these other shows. But the D-Block shows were constantly outperforming.
Yes.
Out of all the blocks, D-Block, their shows were specifically successful, which is very interesting when you look at it. I mean, you know, it's the old guard, Tanahashi, Naito, Goto, like all the old favorites are in there. Zach and Cobb, they've had a million matches with those guys as well. So I thought that was interesting that of all the blocks, D-Block was the one that really seemed to have the fans. Well, it's not that surprising. I mean, like Tanahashi and Naito are in there, like, most popular guys, so it makes perfect sense. But you ideally, you would have wanted some of the other younger talent to maybe not...
Yeah, we had A and B block in Osaka, and they drew a little bit above 3,000. And we had the Aichi show that we talked about very early in the G1 Climax. Not very early, actually day 10 of the G1 Climax. Yeah. One of the worst shows of quality-wise of the tournament, actually, but the drawing ability in the main event of Tanahashi and Hiroki Goto can't be understated. 3,545 fans.
Yes, absolutely. We talked about that then, and we mentioned it again here because it's true. And I think that's interesting that you look at it. And Naito, Tanahashi, the truth is, yes, they are definitely, there's no question they're not where they were physically. But if you look at this tournament, you know, when I did a lot of scientific stuff, match times, how they wrestled, who they wrestled, who had everybody's best matches and worst matches, all kinds of stuff to come into my final pure tournament ratings here. Mm-hmm. And if you look at it, Tanahashi finished 15th, which sounds kind of bad until you realize that's top half of the field. Like, there were 17 guys he was ahead of in this tournament. Like Tanahashi, and you know, Naito was like very slightly above Tanahashi. Like they're kind of on the same level, pretty much. So it's like, you know, like one was 15th, while the other was like 13th, or tied for 12th actually. So it's like these guys are broken down, and they're not where they were. Like Tanahashi in the past would be like a number one, like you know, like top three, top five, and he's not that anymore. He was not an MVP candidate in this tournament. But again, if you had swapped. Like, let's say Tanahashi, and let's say you swap Tanahashi and Hikuleo, of all people, and you put Tanahashi in that block where there's a lot of inspired talent, I think his matches may have even come across a lot better even than D block, where you had, you know, Goto was a liability for most of the tournament with the injury, no fault of his, but, you know, he wasn't having great matches. Hayes, Coughlin, and Yano really didn't add anything. And Naito was a liability for most of the tournament. And Cobb, you know, he had a good tournament, but it wasn't great. You know, like he kind of wasn't able to overcome some of these bad guys either that he wrestled. Had some good stuff too, but really you're looking at Zach as the one safe guy throughout the tournament. And then everyone else is question marks. So D-Block, you know, it would have been interesting to see where they had paired up. But I mean, it worked out in the end for D-Block at least. But my point is, despite their breaking down, I still thought this was one of the stronger matches in the D block of the tournament.
I agree.
And they had a tournament that was not, there's nothing to be ashamed about their tournaments, like Naito or Tanahashi. Obviously Naito has moved on, but even Tanahashi, I thought, had a very respectable run and a good run for 90% of wrestlers. It's just because of, he is historically so super great that it feels like he stepped down a lot, which he has.
Yes. I'm just looking at his recent G1 outings, and ever since he won the tournament for the last time in 2018, he has not been able to gain more than 8 points in a G1 climax. And this year and 2022, he finished the tournament with 6. So this then tells you, yes, okay, Tanahashi is not the biggest star anymore. He is getting older, and the results tell the story. He's not getting anywhere close to the decision, but he's still a viable player of the tournament, of course. Do you think that... I mean, of course, he's going to be in the tournament in the foreseeable future, but when will the point come where they tell him, okay, you're on the level of a Kojima or a Tenzan now?
That day is coming, but you can't argue that he's still... The thing is, when Kojima and Tenzan left, they were downplayed for 5, 6, 7 years, you know, when Tenzan retired. Tanahashi still is a difference maker now. Like, this tournament proved it, right? Yes. Right here. So I don't think that day is coming even next year. I think we've at least got 2 or 3 more years, and who knows?
We got at least two or three more years.
Yeah, and we're talking in the future. Who's to say? Like, what could happen? They may still need him once more 5 years from now, for all we know. But I didn't get, like I said, when I watched him, I know a lot of people always bring that up with him, but again, I wasn't watching somebody I felt like was on the verge of collapse in the tournament. No. I mean, look at this last match. When he hit that aces high to the outside, he popped up. Yeah, he popped up, and it looked like he got an energy boost after doing this crazy move. And it's like, okay, you've still got some gas left in this tank, Tanahashi. You know, but like I said, everybody knows that he has definitely gone down. Like you said, even in the point standings, he hasn't been able to get over 8. So they're keeping him just useful enough for them to be a guy. If he starts going down, I mean, this was a 6-point outing for him. It wasn't a great run. There's less people in the tournament as well, so we do have to take that into account. Or in terms of the block, there's more overall, but just in terms of the block. So we have to look at that as well. But I think he's a guy you keep around for a few more years, pretty much until the wheels fall off, I think, with him, is how this is going to end up going down. Like, it's going to take something crazy or, like, him to really, because everybody knows he is broken down and hurting for real. But I think he's still got a couple more years if they want it and he wants. Like, I think he would have to say no before they said no.
Or
his popularity would have to go down enough to where he doesn't mean as much anymore.
Yeah, very similar, actually. Very similar things go for Tetsuya Naito as well. Of course, the Tanahashi has been wrestling longer than Tetsuya Naito, 23 years, and Tetsuya Naito has been wrestling 17 years, but Tetsuya Naito has been going hard as well for these 17 years. So shout out to him for still being able to do most of the stuff that made him popular as this Los Ingobernables character with not only the Destino, but the Combinación Cabrón, and of course this new swinging DDT into a small package. So he's still able to go at this point of his career, and he's moved on. And so we'll see more from Tetsuya Naito and Tanahashi in the G1 Climax, of course. Yeah, I talked about D-Block first, Dylan, because, of course, we're going back a day to Yokohama Budokan and 2,360 fans in attendance for the C-Block final, because this ties into today's quarterfinal show with Evil. And at first in G1 action, we had the match that you mentioned already with Tomohiro Ishii and Mikey Nicholls doing what Ishii always does and what Mikey did in this tournament. They just went at it and had a fist fight, and it was awesome. I love that match.
Oh, what a great... I love Mikey Nicholls. Like, they're the revelation of the tournament. one of our most fun people to watch throughout the block play. And Ishii, I mean, obviously had an amazing tournament, as he always does. Even now, he's another guy. I think the sad truth of it is, like, looking at his tournament win, I think he might be closer to getting removed than Tanahashi, actually, by the company. Not because of his skill level, for sure. Certainly not. This is another one of those political moves. It's definitely not because of the thinking about the best tournament, because he was probably the best person in this thing. And he had another great match. Way to end it out, got the win, but only up to 4. Yeah. It feels like, you know...
Same for Yoshihashi.
Yeah, he's another guy. He was he's a tag champion. He still only got 4 at the end of the day. But Mikey deserved a lot of credit for this tournament as well. Great run, so much effort put in his matches, so much heart in his match, so much risky stuff with his headbutts and things like that. But he did what he had to do to stand out, and he wasn't going to be like Haste wearing the bucket on his head. He had to fight, and I
And that's the thing about these matches, you know. We've been talking about these tournament matches that don't really matter anymore, or you know that the guy isn't advancing in any shape or form. But if you have two guys that just put everything on the line, that fight their hearts out, they can just win the crowd over. They can win anyone watching over. And they did this in this match. I saw a lot of praise for that universally on podcasts and on Twitter. So if a guy just walks in and has a great match in the G1 Climax, even though he's already out, you can acknowledge that and you can love that. And that's the great spirit of this G1 Climax tournament.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, I mean, not to jump ahead too much, but when they had the quarterfinals, I really have no... no excitement for any of those matches, to be honest with you. Outside of maybe one was okay. But these were not very interesting people who advanced, in my opinion, for the most part.
Yeah.
So I was, like, living with the guys. Like, eliminated or not doesn't matter to me. I just want to see effort and fight and good matches.
Yeah, but sometimes these matches, that's the thing. Sometimes these matches are just not exciting. When you know that the guy is eliminated, you know that these matches aren't going to be anything special. Like, for example, the Tama Tonga and Hinata match didn't give me anything.
Oh, yeah, that was a fine match. Nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, a fine match.
Not anything. Like, definitely not as good as Ishii and Mikey. But yeah, Hinari Tonga, that's about what you would expect from these guys. Yeah. Like, good dudes to have, but not going to jump out. I don't think. This is kind of fit my expectations.
Hinari only at 4 as well, Dylan. What did you think about him? Is he going to be on the chopping block too?
Oh, no. I don't think anybody's really on the chopping block next year. Maybe Ishii of everybody. Maybe Ishii. And I hope not. I hope that's wrong. But
the G1 would be so much... lose so much quality without Tomohiro Ishii and without Yoshihashi, for example.
Yeah, that's true. He's a champion right now, so I think he does have that. Like, the tag run will keep him... Again, like somebody like Tanahashi is useful to New Japan. That's the difference between him and Nagata and those guys. Like, it doesn't even matter about them. Like, when they retired, it was just like a fun little thing they could bank on one last time. Yoshihashi's useful to them because of a tag run. Like at the end of the day, so they'll probably keep him around. Ishii, I mean, the thing is, they may have 40 people in this tournament next year, so I wouldn't be writing off anybody at this point.
Why the hell not? They're New Japan; they can't get away with anything, basically. At this point,
exactly. Like, this is a 32-man tournament we're talking about right now. I wouldn't be cutting off anybody yet, but we'll see. And the thing is, if that format goes down, then there will be some people squeezed out. But I mean, you look at this tournament, there's all kinds of foreigners that they really don't need. I mean, like, we brought that up already before. So there's people. If they need to get rid of some people, there are some people that they need to get rid of. But Hinari, I thought he had an okay tournament. Like I said, like, he did pretty good. You know, he had the big matches. I thought the match with Mikey on the first night was like the most unexpected banger ever.
Yeah, I love the Ishii match.
Yeah, the Ishii match was great. You know, so he did some stuff. He didn't grab me the way Mikey did, but he was a good guy to have in the tournament, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know what the plans are with him. He had this idea that he told Eddie Kingston that Hinari has been going through the dojo system while Eddie Kingston is just a fan coming in watching tapes. And you'd think that they would build on that, but Eddie Kingston pinned him straight in the tag match that they had. So I don't know if there is any story for a strong openweight title match if he got pinned by the champion. I don't know.
Yeah, they could have thought that through a little bit better.
I guess.
They probably didn't even, unfortunately for him, they probably didn't even put that much thought into it. To be honest, it's Hinari we're talking about. Another lower card guy. Like, these guys are just getting crumbs to try and stand out at the end of the day. A lot of these guys. I mean, again, a 32-man tournament. Even if you're good, you still have to climb up so much to get through. So that's kind of tough for guys like Hinari and Tonga.
What do you think about the David Finlay and Eddie Kingston match that had a rating of 7.34 on Cage Match?
Oh, Finlay Kingston. Let me see what I rate that here. I'm going through a lot of stuff right now. It was pretty good. I was a little lower than the inmates, but not a bad match, I would say. Finlay took a lot of the match as well. They tried to make this, I think, feel bigger than it kind of was at certain points with the big spots they were doing, like kickouts and stuff like that. Which is kind of a staple of these Kingston matches as well. Like I said, this guy's living his dream here, so you're going to see all these Japanese-style matches, quote-unquote.
I watched the video of him going to Toshiaki Kawada's ramen shop. This was the sweetest thing I've seen in a long time. Eddie Kingston, with one fell swoop, just became a little child again, and it was just so heartwarming to see. So happy for the guy.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, you know, like I said, I've said this the whole tournament. Like, this tournament it's not like there's any practical reason behind this, like for Kingston. He gets to live his dream at the end of the day. So I haven't been a fan of all of his matches, to be quite honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
But I recognize as well, probably him doing what he wants is probably more important to him than making him have great matches to me personally. And everybody roots for the guy because everyone loves him so much anyway. So he can pretty much do anything and he'll have a good little uptick of fans. So great for him. It's great for him that he got to have this tour, got to live that dream. We should all get to live our dreams at certain points. So very happy for him. And Finlay got to advance, which I knew was going to happen as well. Like, I was like, oh, they're not going to keep Finlay out of the quarterfinals.
No.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Fine match. Like, nothing wrong with it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what it is, basically. And this then set up the main event of that show, with Evil going in at 8 and Shingo Takagi going in at 7. And we got another very flat ending, and that's of course the style that Evil brings. That's the entire process of thought that's behind his matches. He is supposed to be the guy to send everybody home with a deflated feeling in their guts after they expected the babyface to go over. And I'm really glad, Dylan, that we get to compare this Evil match against Shingo Takagi with the other Evil match against Zanada, because in my opinion, it's very obvious that the Evil match works when you have an opponent that the crowd is really getting behind. And we got that with Shingo Takagi in this match. You can, of course, say, yes, Shingo Takagi was the dumb babyface that didn't bring his friends ringside, while Evil had all the shticks. Dick Togo, of course, with his choking rope. Then they had Sho and Yujiro Takahashi come out. One of them rang the bell when Dick Togo counted the pinfall that Shingo Takagi had seemingly won the match with. Yes, that's a stupid babyface move, but it was, of course, for the reason that the run-in of Los Ingobernables de Japón, first, of course, Tsuji and Bushi, and then Hiromu Takahashi, got the crowd going. And I can understand that. I can get behind that reasoning when the babyface looks a little dumb because he doesn't bring his friends, but in the end, his friends come ringside. And you can always go back and say, yes, Shingo didn't want LIJ ringside because he wants to fight on his own. That's all fine and good. But the ultimate bottom line of this match is that there never was a real roar of the fans that lasted throughout this match. There were moments in this match. There were spikes in this match, and these spikes definitely came with the interferences both from the House of Torture and from Los Ingobernables de Japón. The crowd lived and died by these interferences, definitely. But when I, for example, compare this to, I watched the very controversial Mio Momono and Mayumi Ozaki match from Marvelous. When you compare it to this match, the Ozaki match is a much more effective match of that sort, because Kurken in the Marvelous match was completely behind Mio Momono, and there was a roar throughout the match. The crowd was really living and dying with Mio Momono, and not only with some spots within the match. And that then, in comparison to the Zanada match, showed me that, okay, yeah, the people want Shingo Takagi to win this match. That's why they got behind Takagi to overcome Evil, and Evil then won. But when you then go to the quarterfinal match, you saw two guys that the crowd isn't behind. And the match that we had, I put it on Twitter, and I'm standing behind that. I'm behind my thoughts still there that I had after the
Speak
match.
Speak your truth, Strigger. Don't let these
that
people
That match you down. Was a complete failure. That Evil and Zanada match was a failure. The crowd was not invested in anything that happened in the match. The only reactions really came when Dick Togo made his interference in the match. And it didn't even need Sho and Yujiro Takahashi to defeat the champion. No, it just needed another ref bump and another Evil stick match by all the metrics that he always goes by. And not only did the match itself not succeed at what they planned. They planned Sanada was supposed to be the big babyface going into this match, and the fans should rally behind the champion. And still, Evil got the win. That's questionable in and of itself. And Sanada, he went 7-0 in this tournament. He beat everybody in Block A. And we wondered what's going to be happening in October. And now we know it's going to be Evil and Sanada in October for the title. And when you look at everybody in Block A, no one was able to defeat Sanada. But the first thing that happened as soon as Sanada was out of this block is he lost. So
yeah, he was in a geek block.
He was in a geek block. Block of geeks.
Yeah, who should be the future. That we were told was the future of the company before the tournament started.
Nobody is on Evil's level in this block.
That's what they told us. Like, that's what New Japan told us through this. Okay, there's a lot to take in with what you said there. So, first of all, I'm going to take a U-turn a little bit and talk about that Marvelous match.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I totally understand people who, like, hated this match because of the loss.
Yeah.
Because like, everyone loves me a moment. I totally get it. But as a match, this was completely enthralling and entertaining, in my opinion.
It was absolutely effective.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so well done on their part. And I just enjoyed watching it. But that doesn't mean it was the right decision, like, either. No. Like, I'm not defending that. I'm not somebody that's going to be like, oh, yeah, this is genius booking. Like, it's not. It's stupid. Like, it was bad. It shouldn't have happened. We all know that. But as just watching it in a vacuum as a match, no emotional attachment, this was awesome. Like, it was, like, so well done. Like you said, the crowd lived and died because they cared for real about Mio winning. The New Japan, the thing with Evil.
And you had Takuma Iroha ringside, who was rallying behind Mio Momono all the time.
Yeah, that was an important part as well, going in there. So, like, something could be a bad booking decision, but also a great match. Some would say that the Okada and Kaito match from the Dome would be like that, because I thought that was, like, very harmful ultimately, but still a great performance at the same time.
Yes.
Like, both those things can be true separately, and this remains to be seen how, if this will do damage to Momono. It might hurt because her title reign sucks so much.
Yeah, that was bad, yeah.
Yeah, like that was probably worse. Like, if this match had happened 6 months from now, and you had a real title reign, I think that it would have meant maybe a little bit more, or at least we'd have gotten the title reign out of it, and I think people wouldn't have reacted so negatively. But the thing is, okay, so they cared for real in that situation. Evil has no passion, like, to his matches. These pops and things you're mentioning, it's like empty calories, practically.
Yeah,
like,
it means nothing. The fans only react if they are forced, basically, to react to what is happening inside the ring.
It's basically the equivalent of a guy going on Raw Monday and saying, oh, your local sports team sucks.
Yes.
Like, it's going to get a reaction, but that doesn't mean anything in the long run.
It's not a reaction that will last.
Exactly. It's an easy pop. Like, easy heat. That's the thing with Evil. Like, his whole match is built around cheap heat. It's not real, like, or anything important. And the idea of Sanada being an over babyface has definitely been hurt by this tournament, despite what they've given him, I would say. Throughout it. But that was actually my main issue, too. I had already kind of prepared myself that Evil was going to advance, even though I wanted Shingo, obviously.
Yeah.
So I'd kind of figured, like, okay, like, they always kind of go with Evil in their spots. You know, outside of last year, they went away from that. But they'll probably want that for some reason. And they did it. And my issue with the Sonata match was exactly what you said. He beat everybody in the block, including the Three Musketeers. And it's that's who they told us was the future of the company. And so now with this tournament, and we kind of said on the last episode, this felt more like a punt year for them than something that really meant much, you know, at the end of the day. And it totally turned out to be right. Like, this match basically proved that, with Evil beating Sanada right away. So to me, when you go on a run like that, you should use that. That loss should be a huge moment. The same way Sonata beating Okada was a huge moment in past years. This was not a huge moment by any stretch of the imagination. Evil, he's had his run at the top, and it wasn't well received by the fans. Like we it's proven. Like we know that. And we see now, you know, if you want to read into the reactions, it's just cheap heat and nothing more at the end of the day.
There's nothing substantial to it. Nothing will ever last. We know what the evil shtick is. We know what the evil match is. We have metrics about what evil is able to do. You can always come and say, oh, that was the pandemic era. But no, we know what the reactions to evil look like. And that's just it. And not only, Dylan, not only did we have the Evil and Shingo Takagi match in comparison, but we also can compare it to the David Finlay and Will Ospreay match on the same show, because we had back-to-back matches that were structured very similarly with an interference-heavy match structure, and the Finlay and Ospreay match, it was completely over. It had the organic crowd reactions that you'd want for a babyface like Sanada. It had everything. It had the passion. It had the passion of both the wrestlers. While the other match, the Evil and Sanada match, you could easily put two robots in the match. We'd get the same reaction out of the crowd.
And see, like, Evil, he's really not even a real wrestler at this point. He's like, he's a collection of tropes formulated into his matches. It's not like you have real thinking or thought behind his matches. It's just like a collection of tropes you hope end up coming out together. And there's been times where it didn't even work to that level, to where, like, remember the Evil and Finlay match in the tournament? I mean, that was, the crowd was not into that, you know, very, very much at all. And is it worth it? And, like, that's the thing with Evil. Is it worth having all these terrible show-breaking matches? Is it worth it to get the huge pop of the babyface beating him at the end?
Is it worth it?
No, I mean, I don't think it is. Like, the evidence says it's not, but I guess, because that's what, you know, if you are an Evil defender, I don't know how many of those are out there, but...
Those out there. I don't know. When you just look at it, it's just so blatantly obvious that it's just not working.
It's a lonely island, the Evil Fan Club right now, but if there are, and that's probably what you would point to, that, oh, it all works out in the end when you get the babyface to conquer him, and... is the evidence of that?
And I've said it. You have to give an act like Evil something so that people will really fear that they might beat their favorite babyface. You have to have him win some of the matches. And I get it. Evil, they've always pointed that out on commentary, that Evil has the best stats of anyone that never advanced out of the G1 Climax block. I get that. And at that point, I was buying that Evil would beat Shingo Takagi and would advance out of the block, so why not? But is it worth it? Like I said, is it worth it that he beats the champion in a flat match and makes everybody that the champion beat prior to that look bad? And I don't think that's worth it.
No, I don't think anything about him is worth it. I think he actively makes the whole company... Like, these kind of matches... And like you said, it's not just him. There's multiple people that you can point to. But I think these kind of matches make the whole promotion look worse, actually. Like it makes it harder to invest in anything when you see stuff like this, or Yano, or Kenta, or any of these other guys like that. Of his ilk. It makes it harder.
Get Kid was there too.
It makes it harder to invest in anything as anything serious when every show you've got somebody like this just totally ignoring all the rules, you know, like no logic behind anything. It's just, again, it's just tropes to get to where they want to go. And it's very unentertaining, in my opinion.
It felt like that in every match in the last couple of shows we had a ref pulled out of the ring.
Yeah, and that's one of their favorite spots.
And especially, someone pointed that out on Twitter to me, that especially Marty Asami looked so horrendous.
Yeah.
He was the ref for the Will Ospreay-David Finlay match. And Jeff Cobb tried to stop the Bullet Club from cheating. He took the table away. And for that, he was thrown out by Marty Asami. It's hilarious. The refs in Japan are the dirt worst.
Yeah, worst refs in the business. And I've always thought that Red Shoes is a terrible performer and like easily makes all of his matches worse with how he referees. And Marty, unfortunately, has not gotten a lot better either. So the New Japan style in general is just the main benefit of it is to make the referees look stupid in every match. And then if the referee has no control and the rules don't mean anything, then why am I watching this at the end of the day? It's kind of what I feel like when these happen. And you hope that you can get great matches here and there, which did occur. I don't think the I still don't think even yet there's been that match that's like the match of the year, you know, oh. that would come out of this. Like I think we're still missing that even after all of this. But there has been some good matches. Wrestling-wise, there's a lot of quality in the tournament. Like there's been good stuff throughout the tournament. It's just nothing that's really grabbing you, and especially with this quarterfinals, as I said, when you got announced with these eight, it's either guys who've been there and done that before, like either stale guys or guys who are just bad. And it's like there's nothing interesting they can really pull out outside of maybe the Okada final match. Like it's either, you know, Ospreay or Naito. So like that's kind of what we're waiting for right now is that final and hope that it comes together.
Before we go to that, let's look at the other matches. I've said it. I really liked the Ospreay and Finlay match. I thought this was the much better version of the interference match. Will Ospreay, out of all people, was the smart one to bring his friends ringside, Dylan. What a revelation.
See, that's another thing. Like, there's no logic to anything they do. Like, that's why you have so many examples. I mean, how many times did we say, oh, Gabe Kidd's going to run out early until they finally caught on overall? Like, they just do the same crap over and over.
Yeah, Renarita is smart, but he's still bad because he just only got 5 points or 4 points, however much it
Six
was.
Points. But, okay. Yeah, he had the same amount as Kaito. He was actually, like, tied for third or something in the block. But, yeah, like they just do the same crap over and over, and it's really stupid. And I wish that they would think through things a lot better. But this was good. Ospreay and Finlay, definitely... I mean, definitely better than the other match.
And that's the situation of a match where you really could see that there was an emotional aspect to it because these two definitely did care about this one.
Yeah, and we all knew that coming in anyway, just with their history and what they built. And I think the Finley push has done a good job. Ospreay, good babyface type of player in New Japan right now. We'll see how far they go with him, but I think he's, you know... With the crowds and what he's done, we kind of mentioned it before, the Ospreay Okada show didn't do as much as we would have wanted, or they would have wanted more accurately. But for a match quality-wise, I think he's been one of the stronger performers like up and down the tournament. And again, a B-block really helped make that block stand out. And Finlay, I know some people hate Finlay and think he sucks, but I've liked his run, honestly. I thought he's done a pretty good job. Again, it's more so the vibe he brings is much more legit than most of their other heels, and I think he's done a good job carrying
himself. And I think that will ultimately really help him to get a better standing within the New Japan fans, that you really think this is a legit badass.
Yeah, and they needed that, and that's a reason why I like him, is because he's at least doing something different than a lot of the other heels. Although this was, like you said, it kind of devolved into another cheating match, ultimately, which is a shame, because he'd have been doing such a good job without all of that. But
yeah, and we're at the G1 Climax quarterfinals, and we got two matches of that sort that, while the one match with Ospreay and Finlay was good, I thought the Evil and Zanada match was just atrociously bad.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was no real redeeming value to the Evil and Sonata match. It was really bad. I think there's no question about that. But, again, you put those names on paper, and I'm expecting a horrible match at the end of the day. Like,
I revisited my tweets that I made about the Tokyo Dome match 2 years ago, and it was, it was much like that match.
And I mean, that was a joke. Like, in that match, you could see people laughing at that match. In the dome. Like, go back to that dome match.
Yeah, they were just silent.
Yeah.
People had their laugh, and they were ready to move on.
Yeah, that's the thing. It makes the company look bad more than Evil or any one person, like these kind of matches. So, like I said, two interference matches and one match featuring Hikuleo. So,
yeah,
great
the
fight,
Hikuleo
great
match.
Show.
I thought that the Hikuleo match, it was exactly what it was supposed to be. It was exactly what you told us at the last show that we did, Dylan. He was just the roadblock for Tetsu Naito. This was an all right match, all right length, and Hikuleo is out without really looking that he would be able to overcome Naito. So he made it to the quarterfinals and was, when you looked at all the match outcomes and how much the wrestlers got inside the match, he was the weakest link of these quarterfinals, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, him just advancing is a huge upgrade in where he's is standing. You know, like that was a total surprise to everybody, pretty much. I don't think anybody expected that coming into the tournament. Very few. Like, I don't want to, you know, talk about anybody's predictions. If you predicted Hikuleo at the start of the tournament to advance, then, you know, I got to give it up to you. But I would say the vast majority didn't. So for him to even make it is a huge deal. And like I said, even him, we talked about it in the last show, him advancing, they're trying to make a new Fale, like a big guy that could be in this exact role to be a roadblock to your main stars. And that's what he was in this match. So I guess mission accomplished somewhat for that. And it wasn't a bad match. Again, it's just, it wasn't anything we'll remember by the next show at the end of the day. Like, it was just a totally fine, like, 3-star level match.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and then we had the main event, and it was once again Katsushika Okada who had to save the show, and I thought this was a really strong match. We had a lot of offense for Zack Sabre Jr. Zack took a lot of this match and tried to wrap up Okada with all kinds of submission moves, and it's always great to see Zack go to work, whether it's a leg lock, whether he's transitioning to an arm lock, or whatever structure he's pretzeling his opponent up with. It always looks great. I enjoyed it. This was an interesting match because nearing the end of the match, we went to wrist control, but not from Okada. We went to wrist control from Zack Sabre. Both were lying inside the ring. Zack took Okada's hand, and he was going for the Rainmaker. So Zack Sabre basically tried to mock Okada here, trying to hit his own move on him, but that backfired and led to Okada being able to fire up his finishing sequence, and then he just beat Zack Sabre, plain and simple, with a Rainmaker.
Yeah, I thought this was a really strong match overall, like a great main event. It felt like they may have been a little extra motivated after the last match, kind of. It wasn't as great as it could have been to some people. It was, the crowd reaction wasn't as great as it could have been. So I felt like they were a little energized to really deliver in this main event. And I thought they did a good job here. I mean, this show did a strong number for the quarterfinals, the Funabashi gym there. You know, you had a good, nice little run here to almost 2,800 fans. So that's much better than they did before earlier in the year. I mean, that's like 2,000 people more or something than they did earlier, and better than the Stardom show earlier as well with the Triangle Derby. Yeah, so they did a good little number here, and Okada got to be inspired here. The crowd was into this. And they worked really well, and again, Zack with another strong match. And Okada, he's another one that's, you know, was one of the stronger performers in block play, I would say, was Okada. So it obviously made sense they would come together. I like the note of him trying to do the Rainmaker for Okada. And I thought it really helped that throughout the match, Okada was still kind of doing his, he was trying to do more of like an over the, like not over the top, but more like a heel type of guy, Okada in the match. And obviously he's the bigger player, but the crowd ended up going with Okada anyway. So it all came together at the end, and it was a good match. And I know a lot of people thought this was like a really great match, but I definitely think it benefited from being on after the Evil and Sonata match. It made it look that much better to compare it.
Yes. And that's ultimately it, what we have for the G1 Climax. I was not able to watch anything from the undercard today. I drove home, and I was right home in time for the quarterfinals, so I didn't watch anything of the undercard. I'm probably going to revisit the Young Lion matches here and maybe one or two tags. But that's it for the Funabashi show. Much like you said, 2,790 fans. Good house for them there. They will have one day off on Friday, and then we'll move on to the G1 Climax semifinals. Evil versus Okada and Will Ospreay versus Tetsuya Naito. So, Dylan, what do you think is going to happen?
Okada versus Naito. That's what I picked.
In the finals.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that this is going to happen as well. Let's quickly go through the other options.
Yeah.
It would make sense for Evil to beat Okada, and I'm not ruling that out. I can see that happening.
Especially if Naito's in the final. It's an
especially
obvious.
If Naito's in the final, because Evil has already beaten Shingo Takagi and Sanada, one current LIJ member and one former LIJ member, and going for the LIJ leader in the final would completely make sense. And that's that could be where they are going with the Evil push, because now he has twice beaten babyfaces, and this is the ultimate push of him in the tournament and the ultimate version of what I said, that people in Sumo Hall will really rally behind Tetsuya Naito and will want Tetsuya Naito to win this match. And they could go back to that idea of Evil getting heat behind the babyface.
Yeah, it's the same thing they did with Jay and Ibushi in the final that year. Where, you know, like, they'll have a mediocre match, but the crowd will react so strong that people will think it's good. Like, they'll say it's good.
I like the match.
Exactly. So you liked the match, even though it was kind of not a great match, but the crowd was great and made it special. And people will tell you that that match will be good, like Evil and Naito. Like, the crowd will react so strong that they'll say it's good, but it'll be an Evil match. So, you know, at the end of the day. And, like, so... And again, I still will feel the same if that happens, where they have this epic final with the fans rallying, that it really still wasn't worth it at the end. Like all that we've went through to get there. But, I mean, I could totally see that happening. And it saves you an Okada and Naito match as well in the future. So it really makes sense for Evil to advance, unfortunately. But I just think that he's already got his big win over Sanada. I don't think he really needs to get to the final, but for the storytelling purposes, what you said makes a lot of sense.
So we can quickly rule out the Osprey and Evil match. That wouldn't make any sense.
Yeah, that would be...
That wouldn't make any sense at all. Osprey and Okada, they...
I wouldn't rule that out.
I wouldn't rule that out either, especially because Okada lost to Osprey in the tournament, and that would make sense for Okada to get his win back.
Exactly. Like, I could totally see that exact scenario playing out, to be honest.
What I can see, though, now with... We have the Evil push. We have seen it. What if the G1 Climax final is Tetsuya Naito versus Evil? Naito wins. But Evil, of course, beats Sanada. Evil then beats Sanada again. And becomes champion.
Yeah.
And then they do the match with Tetsuya Naito and Evil again in the Tokyo Dome. I can see that happening.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want that, of course, but now that we have that path, I can see that being a possibility.
And the thing is, though, Sanada is such a cold champion that for so long, I can't imagine wrapping my head around him being in the main event.
We've talked about that before the tournament, Dylan, and we weren't really sure where that path of his would be leading us. And now, after the Evil match, I'm pretty certain that they have to get the title off of him.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, again, if we had any sense, we knew that all along. We knew that he wasn't over. Like, everybody already knows that if you watch his matches at the end of the day, that he's not a very good champion. And I guess that this was the final straw that proved that.
This was the final straw, I think, yes.
For you, I guess, not me. I had already thought this long ago, but...
I was kind of 50-50 on it, to be quite honest. I actually wanted to see where that tournament goes for him, how he looks... when it's all said and done, and now it's all said and done for him, and that tournament, even though he got the 40 points, 7-0, they gave him the chance, 7-0, but they also had him lose by the first opportunity they had.
I mean, they had other opportunities. they wanted.
Yeah.
They just didn't want to. It really set, like... It solidifies where those other guys are, like in A block on the card, pretty much. That Evil is at a level above them, and that's not a fun thing to think about. But what you said is very realistic. At the very least, you would get... I think if Evil and Naito was going to face at the Dome, Okada would win like in this match versus Evil. Like Okada would get to the final, so they wouldn't just...
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
Yeah, like, and then Evil can just win the title and face Naito at the Dome anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They did that. So, we'll see. Neither of those options feel like good main events, though. Evil or Sonata versus Naito. Where's the evidence that Evil is a strong draw in Japan? Like, in terms of his show?
No, I said it. There is no evidence of it.
Yes, exactly. So, why? You know, like, at the end of the day, why would you go against... like, why would you go against reality to do that?
Once again, I'm still, when I look at Okada and Ospreay, I see other options on the table for them for Wrestle Kingdom.
Yeah, you think the AEW guys, and for Ospreay, definitely, I think that's going to happen. Brian, you know,
I'm
50-50 on him. Like, will he wrestle outside of AEW? Does he, you know, like, what will happen with that?
And that's
I don't think
will they play the waiting game for that? Will they risk Okada not winning the climax so he could go against Danielson, and Danielson could just not be able to do the match?
And that's a lot for a Dome show. I mean, you have a very weak main event. Either way, as a champion, like, you've come around and realized that Sonata sucks as a champion, like, even if he wins. Evil, we all know, sucks. So no matter who wins, that's a very weak main event.
It is. And
then you're basing your show around foreigners. Again, like, for your other matches to draw.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't feel like a strong Dome show to me.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's not going to happen. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm criticizing them, like, at the end of the day, for making this a possibility. Because exactly. They should have done much better. We shouldn't even be talking about this being a possibility. But when you lay it out, what you said makes sense, like, based on how they've chosen to book their shows. So I think it's a very unfortunate thing that we're here at this point right now. And hopefully...
Here's the thing. I think they've laid it all out. And they, for whatever reason, they are behind this Evil character. They've been for a long, long time. I mean, of course, he had been downplayed in the last 1 or 2 years, but they gave him this strong push. And he always was a guy that got a lot of respect in the G1. Like I said, one of the strongest point getters in the G1 in recent years. Mm-hmm. And I think... And that's Ghetto's booking. He has plans that he has laid out, and he usually doesn't back away from these plans. And it might be that they had this plan with Evil laid out that he is going to go strong in the G1 to boost him up again and then have him become champion and have him be the one to face Naito in the Tokyo Dome as the, in their eyes, very strong antagonist to Tetsuya Naito.
Yeah.
Now, it's very obvious that the idea of him getting a lot of heat behind him isn't working out, but they've started that plan already. And will they back away from it now? I don't think so.
And that's the thing, like, everything you're saying is true, but that's still a flaw on their part at the end of the day.
Right.
Like, you know, like, that still doesn't make it the right thing, like, ultimately, even with their incorrect thinking at the end of the day. And like I said, the thing that has worked on this tour has been Naito, Tanahashi, Goto, the old guard. Like, pretty much. Like, those are the ones that have carried these shows.
Yeah, I mean, why would you care for the younger guys, even if they are so bad?
And that's another flaw that they've had. Again, I don't even want to get into the Three Musketeers stuff, because I think it's...
No, I'm just talking in kayfabe. I mean, I like all these three... It's just,
totally. Whatever problems we have with the young talent are not because of them. Like, not because of the talent. It's because of the booking at the end of the day. And I think that they've done a good job with certain people. And even Okada now is played much more of an antagonistic role throughout the G, you know, not just the G1, but throughout the whole year of New Japan than he normally does. It's led to great work, like some of my favorite work of his career. I think he's at a great level right now, Okada. But he's still Okada, and the fans, like I said, can get behind him very easily if they wanted.
Sure.
Compared to a lot of these younger guys. I mean, we saw in the match with Zach, even though he's not necessarily a younger guy, but they ride behind Okada instead. Ospreay, I think, is a pretty effective babyface. Again, you know, like I said, there's not really a lot of evidence of him being a major draw in Japan, like, or anything like mind-blowing, but he gets good reactions from the crowd. It feels like he's liked in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
again, we're talking about dome main events, though, and these are our options. It's like, oh, we hope Evil can get it, or Sonata. It's like, you're throwing your eggs in these baskets for the dome? And even Sonata's title win, that's another problem with the title win, which, like, yes, him winning was a cool moment for his fans or whatever, but he had been downplayed for so long before that title win came that it really didn't mean as much as it would have in the past, I would say. And now we're at this point with Evil and Sonata. It's tough, man. Like, it's tough, and I can't say I was very interested. I wasn't very interested when the round of eight happened, and this is who we had. And I'm pretty much even less interested now in the round of four. And I think I really think that tournament needs a major match to close out this show. Because, I mean, you're not going to get any Evil and Okada. And Naito and Ospreay, maybe that'll be the match that blows up. Mm-hmm. But I think they need a big match in this tournament.
Yeah, I think Naito and Ospreay will be the one to point at. But they should want a signature final match too.
Yeah.
But much like you said, they've already done the same structure with Jay White and Ibushi years ago.
Yeah.
So they might just revisit that.
And they might, like I said. And I kind of hope they do that, because that would kind of signify to me. If Evil's, I don't think they're going to redo the same match at the G1 final than the main event of the dome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point.
At the end. So I would much rather, like I said, Sonata. The thing is, Sonata is not bad in the ring. It's just he's not exciting. Like, you know, he's just very average, pretty much. Like, maybe slightly above. Evil is just terrible. So, of the two options,
I don't think he cares anymore at this point. That's the thing.
And yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's actually not. He's okay on his own. Yeah, like, if he was just himself, it's just the gimmick. No matter who it was, this would be the result. I mean, you saw Sho Tanaka, great wrestler. And then he goes into this, and now he's bad. It's not because he's bad, it's because
They're talking about Sho. I don't know if you've seen it. I've watched the Isami Kodaka and Sho match from the Basara Kurikan Hall show, and it was a Sho match. What can you say?
Exactly. Like, there's no way it can be good, no matter who you are, or like how talented you are. So, you know, of the two, I would much rather have Sonata than Evil. Maybe that's Evil's use. By being him, he's going to make us more excited for Sonata to get the dome shot.
Yeah, but then we would have behind Sonata against Evil, and that didn't happen either.
No, nobody's behind Sonata, but he's still better to be in the dome than Evil. Like I said, that's Evil's real usage, to get Sonata more over than he is on his own. Even with 7 straight wins, it still didn't really work out at the end, but, you know. I don't know. Like, let's just hope that they can have a big match in the final.
That's what it is. Exactly, yeah. That's the only thing that we can hope for.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the G1 finals is set, yes. Semifinals is set.
Yeah.
Man.
I got some stats for you. I did for the right. Block play.
Yeah, I was just going to try and figure out where to connect from here, because... this quarterfinal show wasn't it, to be quite honest.
So, for most people, their tournament's over at this point, overall. At this point, outside of 4 people now. Who would you say, through block play, had the best tournament?
From all the... I would have to look at the blocks. I mean, I was a big fan of Zack Sabre Jr., but from... what you said, he isn't the top point getter in your thinking.
No, the scientific ratings, he was the top point getter of Block D.
Yeah, no question. I think Tomohiro Ishii has to be up there.
In the pure ratings, it was a tie for first. 4.24 average, which is a great number in the ratings. Ishii and Kaito tie.
Yeah.
For 4.24.
Kaito would have been the second name that I would have thrown in that now.
And Ospreay was just behind them, 4.1. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I can see that.
Very, very close there. Shingo was fourth at 3.96.
Yeah, good one. Yep.
Yeah, so he did a great job. Umino was fifth, like a top 5 finish for Umino here.
I think this tournament, even though that he is in the loser block, I think this tournament did a lot for Shota Umino. Because the one thing that he was lacking before this tournament was a lot of people were saying that he didn't really connect with the audience, and he changed that.
Yeah, he did. I thought even his wrestling felt like a totally different level than what we'd seen before. Here, right. I thought he came across like really well. I thought he probably gained the most. I feel like in the tournament.
I agree.
We talked about that last episode.
Yeah,
but yeah, he was great. Okada 6th, Tsuji 7th, Yoshihashi and Zach tied for 8th. So
yeah,
Who was the next one? Oh, Mikey. Yeah, Mikey.
Yeah, 10. Mikey Nichols. Great tournament for him.
Yeah, great job for him. I did some big things, and one thing I noticed. I like to do is break the pure ratings up from just the regular star ratings, you know, 3-star, blah, blah, blah. I do that, and then you kind of use the pure ratings. That has a lot of scientific crap I won't get into. But one of the big gainers, obviously the top one was Ishii, like plus 70 in his pure star from his actual star ratings. But the second place guy, and he wasn't a top points getter, but with pure stars, it's kind of like, it shows you their potential if all things was equal, pretty much. So if you get a guy who's a big riser, that kind of says maybe he's a little underrated. And Taichi was plus 56 on Pure Stars from his just regular stars. So that guy had if you really think about it, he did have a great tournament.
Yeah.
Just bogged down with some of the guys like, you know, your Kentas or whatever, the Tentakaloas in the block.
I thought that he had a very, very strong match with Great Okan. We didn't talk about that match on the show, actually.
Yeah, I love that match.
I think that was my favorite match on that day. There was a final day of Block B action.
Okan is another one. Through that match, that really bumped his rating up at the end, where he's a guy who really didn't do a lot. But I thought that match with Taichi was great. I loved the idea of it. Just, this is what Okan should be in all of his matches.
Yeah.
Yeah, but unfortunately they didn't. With him, but those are two guys that stood out and had big runs. Zach obviously had a big plus point, you know, again, because his surrounding area was a little weak, his star ratings may not be that high, but his pure rating was very high because of his skill level and what he showed there. Let me give you this stat. Evil. Do you know who he had? This is just the amount of time their matches went, the length of time their match. Let me run down some of the names. He had more time in the ring than all of these names I'm about to say in the block play. Goto.
Okay.
Jeff Cobb. Tanahashi. He had more time in the ring than anybody in D block, first of all, including Naito. He had more time than...
That's a wild stat, because Naito usually has the most ring time.
Yes, that's true. But Yano was in D block, so that kind of...
Yeah,
offset him a little bit. Evil had more time than Yoshihashi and Taichi, who we just mentioned, and more time in the ring we got with Evil than Kaito Kiyomiya.
I'm telling you, Dylan, the run is coming.
Evil had more time, because that's another thing I like to look at. Sometimes that means more than like star rating stuff. Stuff like, okay, who had the most main events of the tour? Or, who was in the ring the longest? That kind of stuff can kind of give you insight to how they think, not necessarily about fans' opinions of matches as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Evil was very ranked high in both of those things here. So, poor Kaito, even less time than Evil in the ring. You bring him in, and that's what they give us. So, Evil, one of the Iron Men, the one who spent the most time in the ring, who had the longest amount of match time in block play, again, not counting quarterfinals, was Umino, actually.
Yeah, he had two time limit draws, of course, yeah.
And Shingo was second as well. Even ahead of Tsuji, who also had some draws in there. So some interesting things to lay out. Evil, a lot of main events, a lot of time in the ring, more than you would want or like to think happened. Somebody like, you know, obviously, I mean, we all knew that Okada would get a lot of time. They did put a lot into Umino and Tsuji in terms of just ring time in the ring, even though, again, the push wasn't really what we would have wanted, probably. And D-Block was the lowest amount of time, because not only Yano, but you also had Coughlin in there as well. So, like, those were both a lot of short matches that kind of drug the others down.
Yeah.
But that's just something I wanted to bring up. When I saw that stat, Evil wrestled more than Kaito in the block, I was like, this shows you where their priorities are right now.
Yep.
And kind of what I said on the last episode, they accomplished some things, just not what we wanted at the end of the day overall. So if you look at, if you try to think like them, it kind of helps. That's kind of how I get through a lot of these stupid decisions they make that everyone gets mad about, is that I rationalize it as saying, oh, this is how they operate.
Yep.
I think that's what we need to do as fans. Not to seem smart or anything, but just for our mental health, I think.
Yeah, you're totally right on that, Dylan, but that shouldn't be the way that we're thinking.
I mean, this tournament, this could send even the most steadfast people into a spiral. I feel like if you think about it too much because of how bad it's been laid out overall. Like you said, it shouldn't be that way. We should be hype. We're going into the final of the tournament, like the G1 climax. We should be out here. I should be feeling like I did at China King Buffet the other day. Listen, I had that Kung Pao chicken and I stood up, Striga. I stood up out of my chair. I had that Kung Pao pop right now. There's no pop with this. There's no G1 pop. There's no Kung Pao pop. There's no G1 pop. But the Kung Pao pop hit me with the Chinese food, so I want to bring that up right now.
Great reference there on your part.
Yes. Listen, I'm a food person, so I will always reference things as food at the end of the day. And Kung Pao chicken is a very delicious meal. I highly recommend it to everybody out there. But that was much more enjoyable than watching this tournament at the end of the day, because we're not fired up. We haven't been excited throughout any of these shows, I feel like we've done. The most excitement we had was arguing about Kaito, I feel like, and trying to figure out what they're doing with
yes.
him. Yes. At the end of the day, like, that was the most spirited this show has been so
far. Absolutely, yeah.
But we want to do, like, we want to have good things, though, Striga. We don't want to be here talking about how bad everything is.
Yeah, it's not like everything is bad, but everything is certainly evil at this point, right?
Yes, absolutely. But listen, hey, we praise...
Can't deny that.
We praised the Mio match versus Ozaki. Marvelous. We praised at the end of the day. We liked that match. We both did at the end of the day. Even though, like I said, it wasn't maybe the best booking decision, but we liked it for what it was. Maybe you could get something like that out of this tournament, but it hasn't materialized yet. So hopefully we're in for some big, big matches.
Yeah, okay. Let's definitely hope for that, because otherwise I don't know how I'll look back at this tournament.
I think we do. Looking at who's...
I mean, we do know, you know?
Yeah, well, looking at who's in this tournament, I think this is something we really need. I don't know to all of our, people, our religious folks out there, but this needs divine intervention, to make this tournament the evil match better. I think that's the only way, because by no human means, maybe some kind of alien stuff they were talking about in the government a few weeks ago. Do they got alien technology to make evil's matches better? That's what they need to release to the public. Don't put us in these
court... Dylan, what's better, divine intervention or alien technology? I'm not sure.
Well, we don't know what the alien technology is.
Yeah.
And divine intervention is historically something kind of hidden. Like, it's something that happens you don't even know. So, like, it could have been something great, but we just can't see it at the day. But I think there's more likelihood that, you know, we're just going to all have to will this to happen to make sure evil doesn't ruin the thing is, the tournament's already bad, but hopefully that it doesn't get make evil's matches better at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Yes. I think that's as much as we can say. We will be back with our conclusion of the G1 climax after the tournament ends. And yeah, I want to say if you enjoyed listening to us dump on evil, I want to thank you all for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Streaming worldwide, this is the MLWRadio.com network.